This morning's scripture is from Hebrews 11, verses 8 to 12. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so, from this one man, and he is as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore.
So we were talking about a little flip phone earlier today, right? It needs to be charged once a month. How many of you have had technology issues before? Oh, okay, right. So I noticed there's almost no millennials here in the crowd. So technology issues, computer issues, right? Your phone, whatever it is. What fixes it 90% of the time? That is a better answer than I had. You turn it off, and then you turn it back on again. And 90% of the time, it works. So that's some free tech advice from a millennial to you guys. Turn it off and on again, and it'll work. It's simple, right? Just a reset. But it solves most of the issues. I don't understand the tech behind it, but it works. I'm looking forward as you guys are continuing to move on in your church story and as you are entering this new stage. And I'm actually excited to share this morning something that I think will be very important for you. But I think the danger in our churches, in North America, Canada especially, the number one enemy that is kind of just lying in the pews and in us and waiting to take our churches down is apathy. And as you guys are about to spring forward you are springing forward now, I think the weakness, the underlying enemy that's present is apathy. And now just like our machines, they break and we don't know how to fix them, we just turn them off and on again. I actually think there's a relatively simple solution to apathy in our spiritual lives. And simply put, it is to turn our faith into action. It's to take our faith out of our heads and to put it into our hands. Turn our faith into action. That's what I want to look at Hebrews 11 this morning. I don't know if you know Hebrews 11, but it's the great hall of faith in the Bible. It's probably one of the most inspiring chapters that you can read. As you go through and you hear story after story of what people in Scripture accomplished because they had faith. And I can't think of any better message to bring for you guys as you move forward than by faith, you will change the world for the kingdom. It's true, and I hope that's what you walk away this morning understanding. But be on alert for apathy. And conquer it by putting your faith into action. So today, as we look at Hebrews 11, we're going to see two things. These are the two main points. Number one, faith is your worldview. Faith is your worldview. We'll dig into that a little deeper. And number two, faith is a call to action. Simply put, faith is a call to action. So, as we dive into Hebrews here, just a little background for you. The book of Hebrews, we don't know who it was written by, so it's kind of surprising that it made it into the Bible, but we don't know who it's written by, but it has really good truth that aligns with Orthodox teaching, so we can trust it. But it was written to a group of people who were persecuted, like most of the Bible, but they were being persecuted for their faith, whether it was Roman persecution or persecution from Jews in the synagogues. These people were being persecuted for their faith. And they had to hold out. They had to persevere in the midst of it. And I think our culture is getting a lot closer to the one that the Hebrews were in. So there's starting to be a lot more direct connections between Hebrews and our world in Canada today, especially as we stand up for our morals, as we stand up for what we do believe, and we are continuously persecuted for it. So that's kind of the background of Hebrews. And at this point in the story, the author just wants to inspire his listeners. He wants to inspire them to continue to persevere in their faith. It's hard. It's hard slugging what they're doing. It's hard slugging what you guys are going to be doing. And yet, we can persevere, because of our faith. So, I had Pat read a little section, but that was just a joke because there's actually a lot more that we need to read to understand it. I told Kathy I wanted to actually just read the whole chapter for you. It's like 30 or 40 verses. I'll save you that. But I recommend you read it later because it all just flows so beautifully. But I'm going to start from the beginning, chapter 1, and just read. So listen as the repetition of these stories washes over you through this message. So that's what the Hebrews author was going for. So starting in verse 1, he says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found, because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful, who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand on the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." By faith. Did you get the point that he was trying to bring? By faith, all of these things were accomplished. And he even helps us out by explaining what faith is. Because I think we use the word faith in a lot of different ways in English. We can say, "I have faith." We can talk about our faith. And it's similar, but it's kind of hard to understand what truly is faith. But the author says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Over this summer, I've encountered a lot of people who just are saying, my faith is, I'm not feeling my faith. I don't feel like I have any faith. And I think that's a common thing that we all will say at some point. But I think that's another mix-up of what faith truly is. Because faith isn't a feeling. Faith isn't an emotion. Faith isn't sensing the presence of God. All of those things will come and go. All of those things are products of faith. But those are not faith themselves. Faith is so much deeper. I want you to go to the next slide there. I think you can see it better than I can. I have an astigmatism in one eye. I haven't dealt with it properly, but a lot of you here, I notice, are wearing glasses also. So you have other things that are just wrong with your eyes. Glasses, I learned this when I went to the optometrist, and it was quite helpful. I didn't take any of his advice, but it was good. Glasses change the light that's coming into your eyes, right? It bends it. It refocuses it so that it will meet at your optical nerve. It allows us to make sense of the world around us. I don't know, but I bet you somebody here, if you don't have your glasses on in the morning, you stumble around like a bear, you walk into walls, your desk, your table, you can't make sense of the world around you. Not all of us are at that point, but I remember driving home from a hockey game one time when my dad, glasses wearer, needs glasses, and he actually had contacts on at the time, and one of his contacts had slid up over his eye, so he could see with one eye and not with the other. I was far too young to realize the danger I actually was in as he was driving, but him not being able to process the world around him in this ton of metal as we drove down the road was terrifying, or should have been terrifying. I'm not going to say his name, so you can't follow up with this, but it's important to process the world around us correctly, isn't it? Our worldview is the way that we process the world around us. I don't know if you guys have engaged with this idea of a worldview. It's become a lot more popular as our world becomes more postmodern and different worldviews start to interact with each other. But I was at a Starbucks just the other day, sitting on the patio, and there was about four groups of people there, and not one group was speaking English. It was actually kind of cool. They were all speaking different languages. I think one was Russian, Arabic. There was another, it was an African language, I couldn't tell you what it was. And then there was me. I wasn't even speaking, so there wasn't any English being spoken. But it was a picture of the diversity that Canada has become now. There's, I think the census results is where this number came from, but there are 150 languages spoken in Canada, which I think probably rivals most countries in the world for diversity. And as we have this diversity, our worldview, our Christian worldview, starts to be contrasted with these other worldviews that are coming in. It actually helps us understand our own worldview better and also to see the difference between those who live around and amongst us. And this isn't just through immigration, this is through secularization of our country. People's worldviews are changing. It doesn't seem like it. We dress the same, we go to the same jobs, we talk the same language. But when you really dig down, there is a difference between a Christian worldview and those other, that 150 languages and those worldviews that go along with them. It's a big, big difference. And the biggest difference, and the most important difference that we need for this passage, is that we believe in a God who will intervene in our lives to be faithful to his promises. I think we take that for granted as Christians. But a lot of other faiths have a very different understanding of God and of the divine. A lot of other faiths, it's God is just present and we need to worship, but he is not personal. He does not intervene in their lives. They're there to worship, they're there to do what he says. But there's not this connection that we get and that we have. And that's what we see here in Hebrews. By faith, these people were able to follow God. These giants of faith had their worldviews completely shaken, shattered, and rebuilt around this idea of faith. Faith was not something that was tacked on to how they viewed the world. Faith was the glasses that they saw the world through. They viewed everything through the cross, even the ones who came before Jesus. It's kind of cool. All these guys came before Christ, and yet they still viewed the world through Christ. It's tempting to live like our neighbors, like our friends. And it's subtle differences, and if we're not careful, actually, we can think that we are living a Christian life. But in reality, we're living a secular life instead of the Christian worldview that we've been given. These giants of the faith lived by faith. That's how they did it. That's how Abel was able to go before God and say, "Here is the best of my flock that I have. I could keep this wool from my clothes. I could keep this meat for later when I need it. But I trust you. I actually trust you. I believe that you're there. I believe that you're faithful in your promises. And I will act on that." Because that's the test of faith. Are you willing to act on it? If God didn't exist, would your life be any different? So that's why Enoch could go before, stand amongst all these people with their degrading morality, with their cheating, with their lying, with their stealing, and he could maintain a righteous life because he truly 100% believed that his God was watching, his God was real, and he was worshiping him with his actions. That's why Noah could hear, I don't know how he heard it, but he somehow heard a voice that said, "Hey, Noah, in this desert that you're in, there's going to be a flood. So go build a boat." And so Noah started building a boat hundreds of miles from water because he genuinely believed God and believed what he said. Abraham called to leave his home, leave his household, and just go. Go to somewhere I'm going to show you. I'm not going to tell you where you're going, but I'll take care of you as you go. And Abraham did it. He got up and left. Sarah, who was told, "You're going to have a child." And she was 90 years old. And she believed. She actually trusted God. She believed that God was who he said he was and that he was going to do what he said he was going to do. Moses. The Hebrews author continues to talk about Moses. And when he was born, his parents had so much faith that they would rather face death, capital punishment by Pharaoh, instead of give up their son. And so they put him in a basket and had faith as they sent him away that God would be faithful and would take care of their child. They truly believed that God was who he said he was, and he would be faithful. Do you live with a worldview like that? Do you live with this complete sold out, "I trust God, I trust his promises, I know he's as real as this table in front of me"? If you do, great. That's awesome. If you're convicted by that a little bit, what would your life look like if you took God at his word? If you, by faith, believed who God was. If you, as the church, by faith, believed that God actually could move in Cremona through you, through your witness, through your kingdom building. What would your life look like? What would be different? That's how these guys made it into this book. But you know what the cool thing is? Hebrews 11, if it were just to continue infinitely, we would be the next ones in that list. By faith, Cremona Congregational Church did this. By faith. It starts with changing your worldview, realizing that God is who he says he is, and he is faithful in his promises. That's the first thing that we learn from Hebrews 11. I want to bring you back to a little idea that comes up in this passage. They were able to do this because The author says they were looking forward to a different city, to a different kingdom. They knew this world was not their home. So I want to reread these. It's Hebrews 10, or Hebrews 11, 10, and then 13 to 16. In verse 10, he says, referring to Abraham, says, "For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. Not this world, but the one that is to come. Not this life, but the new one that Christ is bringing back with him." And it continues on in verse 13. "These all died, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on this earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." Is this your home? I know some of you have lived here for quite a long time. I know Cremona has deep roots. I can't remember what it was, but I asked you guys once how long the longest person had lived in Cremona in one house. I think it was 65, 70 years. It's deep roots. But is this your home? And if it's not your home, how's your life going to be different? Knowing that this is not the country you were made for. This is not the kingdom you were made for. How are you going to live differently? Looking forward to this city that's new, this city that's coming. By faith. That's how these guys accomplished the great things that they did. Actually, and even the not so great things that they did. Because even the mundane is made holy when it's done by faith. Second point is, faith is a call to action. Can you go to the next slide? Just a little picture, cool picture I found. But when God came to Abraham, we don't know how he spoke to Abraham. We kind of tend to think that it was a voice booming from above. But is that how God usually talks to you? See, it's interesting. We always we make these cool stories out of these guys. But honestly, Abraham probably was just in prayer one day and had this intuition, this thought, go move, get up and go. Probably wasn't a booming voice from above. It wasn't an angel in the bush. It was God speaking to Abraham, saying, get up and go. Take your family and take the dangerous journey from where you are, from your safety in Ur, all the way to this land I'm going to show you. And you know what Abraham did? He went. He didn't ask for a plan. He didn't ask for safety. He didn't charter an army to go with him. He just trusted God. And if you follow his story, I think I preached on it even a year ago, there's some interesting developments happen with Abraham. At first, he goes, but then you start to realize he gets to Egypt, and he is worried that this Pharaoh is going to kill him and take his wife from him. It's the kind of dude he was. It's a pretty bad dude. And then, so Abraham says, that's my sister. I'm her brother. Totally forsaking his wedding vows and courage and bravery and anything that we would actually value in a husband. That's my sister. Take her. What? This is the man that God has chosen. This is the man that trusts God. God said to him, I'm going to make you into a nation that is greater than the innumerable sands on the seashore, that is more than the stars in the sky. And he was worried that Pharaoh would kill him. He hadn't even had his kid. Wouldn't have worked. And so eventually God punishes Pharaoh. It's kind of a theme in the Bible, God punishing Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh gives Sarah back, and they leave. And you think maybe Abraham's learned his lesson. And a few years later, once again, comes back to Egypt, different pharaohs in town. Sarah is still a desirable wife. And Abraham still hasn't learned his lesson. And so once again, Pharaoh takes Sarah because she's Abraham's sister. You would have thought he'd have learned. He doesn't. Eventually, once again, Pharaoh's punished. It's a repeat. Sarah comes back. But there's a glimmer of hope in Abraham's story, because years later, after he has Isaac, the promised child, the one he's been waiting for 25 years, God once again speaks to him, probably not in a booming voice, just in his moment of prayer, and he says, take Isaac and go sacrifice him. Now, it's funny because Abraham has been so afraid that he would die at the hands of Pharaoh, right, twice now, and he wouldn't trust God. But this time, something has changed in Abraham. He's put his faith into action enough times to realize he can trust God. So he takes Isaac, and he climbs the mountain, a grueling climb for a father who knows what's waiting for him at the top. And he gets to the top, ties his son up. His son is okay with it for some reason. Isaac had that same faith built up over the years too. But Abraham raises the knife, and then he hears a bleeding in the bushes. Once again, not a voice, not this booming voice from heaven, but he just sees God's action, and he knows this is God's way out. This is what God actually intended. Look at these two pictures of Abraham. Too scared to stand up for his wedding vows, but then willing to sacrifice his only son. That drastic change is his faith. By faith, Abraham was able to change and get to that point, which is really encouraging, because most of us, honestly, if God asked us to sacrifice our son, we wouldn't, right? For many reasons. Rightfully so, by the way. If God ever asked you to sacrifice your son, talk to somebody about it. But Abraham grew in his faith. Started out young, enthusiastic, perseverant. Then trials hit and he stumbled. Does this sound familiar? And then he grew from his trials. This is our lives. All of us have these stories, just framed in a different way. But Abraham's a picture of how our faith is a call to action. It's not a call to just to think about God, but to do things for him. He's not asking us to do what Abraham did, which is nice. But each and every one of us here, each and every Christian, all has a call. Abraham had his as a very specific geographic call, move from here to there. Most of us don't have that. Most of us are set in a circle of influence. We have work, we have neighbors, friends, family. This is the area that God has placed us. And this is where we're called to. We're called to action amongst that circle. Sometimes God will take us away, and if God is calling you to move for the kingdom, just after reading Hebrews 11, I would say do it, because cool things are coming. But if he doesn't ask you to move, right where you are, you have your circle of influence. And it can be hard to try and figure out what the call is that God has placed on us. But I have a few things just to help. First is, what is your passion? Not your job, but what's your passion? Do you get excited about? Where do your gifts, your strengths, your personality all align with a cause? What is your passion? Because God is pointing you there. He's created us as complete individuals. And so our gifts, our passions, are all part of our calling. Where's your circle of influence? Because unless he asks you to leave, he's called you to that circle of influence, to your neighbors, to your family, to your work. And we don't think of our jobs this way, We think of them as just something, usually, unless you really love your job, you have to get through it, right? Get through your 9-to-5, or if you're a farmer, well, then you probably love your job, especially when you're in the whatever that was you were telling me about. I've learned a lot about farming in my time here, and I'm glad I'm not one. But even if you're a farmer, God has placed you there. That's your circle of influence. The people that you engage with, the work that you do, all of this is part of your calling. Spend time in prayer, especially with other Christians, because that's the secret to God's church, is people getting together, spending time in community together through prayer. The calling will emerge out of that. That I'm very confident in, more confident than in turn it off and turn it on again. Spending time in prayer will reveal the calling. And then just spending time in Christian community and telling other people what you see in them, their strengths, their gifts, their personality, and them saying it back to you, all of this will point out your calling. So as you guys as a church go forward, I think this is important. What is your calling? Each individual's, and also for the congregation as a whole. What is God calling you to? Can you go to the next slide? Like I said, Hebrews 11 extends to today. And this same sentence, message, can be written about each and every one of us. By faith, Dale, when called by God, did this. By faith, Kathy, when called by God, did this. What is that sentence for you? Put your name there. What is God calling you to do? And how will that play out? No matter where you are, what you're doing, God has a calling. And if we answer by faith, that'll be a pretty cool story. So I want you to reflect on this week, the rest of today especially. What could your story be? And also, what has it been? Because we're all in different levels of our story. Some of you are able to complete this sentence. Some of you are just beginning the sentence. By faith, when you were called by God, what did you do?